Welcome to the Strength Talking Shop podcast. I'm your host, Matt Smith. We talk all things strength, coaching, fitness, nutrition, powerlifting, strongman. If it involves a barbell, we're going to talk about it. We are presented by Optimum Nutrition Athletics. We all know that protein is the key to muscle recovery, and Gold Standard's best-selling 100% whey protein provides 24 grams of protein that mixes easily using just a glass and spoon. Gold Standard 100% whey is made in their state-of-the-art facility. It's banned substance tested by Informed Choice. And with Optimum Nutrition Athletics program, you can get different items such as their Pro Gainer, which is their mass gainer, protein snacks such as their crisp bars, wafers, cake bites, and almonds. And after dominating the sports and nutrition industry for over 30 years, newly created Optimum Nutrition Athletics brings that same trust and quality that knows how to put convenient options for protein in the hands of athletes who desire to become bigger, stronger, and better at their sport. If this is something that you're interested in getting into your facility, reach out to Dave Harvey of Optimum Nutrition Athletics. Down in the show notes, he's got his email. Dave and the team at Optimum Nutrition Athletics are absolutely amazing. They'll get everything that you need. I use their products every single day. I use the Gold Standard 100% whey for my post-workouts, if I need something quick for protein on the go throughout the day. And also, if I need to grab a snack, I'll just grab one of the almonds, some of the cake bites, and then also the crisps. Absolutely love the crisps and the almonds. So make sure you reach out to Dave Harvey of Optimum Nutrition Athletics, and thank you for being our sponsor. What's up, guys? Strength Talking Shop podcast. Very excited to have the powerful Danny Foley. He's the head strength conditioning coach at Virginia High Performance. He's also the co-founder of Rude Rock Strength. Good morning, Danny. How are you?
What's up, Matt? Thank you for having me on, man. I appreciate it.
We chatted a bunch before the podcast, like I do with everybody, and I'm super pumped, not only just to have you on, but also to see that beautiful Raider Nation flag behind you. If you're listening to the audio, he's got an awesome Las Vegas Raiders flag behind him. We're both diehard silver and black, so that's awesome to see, man. But go ahead and get you introduced here, man. But what's going on over at VHP? And you know, you co-founded Rude Rock, which I highly suggest people go watch you on YouTube and read your articles and everything like that with everything. But what's going on? What's new and everything?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, if you for anybody who's listening here, if you ever run into somebody who's a Raiders fan, don't ever question their loyalty. Because if we can make it through this last 20, 25 years, we are as high on the fidelity chain as we can get. Yeah, man, so VHP, Rude Rock. I've been at VHP now for about 6 years. And man, we've just got an awesome operation going here. Work with some incredible people. We've got a great staff here. Our population is predominantly special forces, special operations. And, you know, we're working with both the active duty and the veteran side. And we run a really interesting program where, you know, like we were talking about, you know, when we were getting going here, you know, most coaches have the issue of, I only have 3 sessions a week. I only see them for an hour at a clip. How do I fit all this stuff that I have to do into here? Well, for us, we're running, you know, this concentrated holistic program that, you know, we see people for about 4 to 6 weeks, and we're training people twice a day. So we get 10 physical contact hours a week. And my issue then becomes, how do I populate all of this time, you know, with things that are pragmatic and effective? So with that, we see a lot of interesting things. Everything is really developed around injury. I can't tell you the last time I had somebody who had a clean bill of health. We see a ton of head injury, TBI, concussion, neck and shoulder, a lot of slap tear, rotator cuff tears. Almost everybody has at least some kind of spinal compression, herniation, bulging. And then, you know, your standard typical lower body injuries. But you know, again, like we were, you know, talking about when we were chopping it up a second ago. You know, I think that there's we're at a very interesting point with strength and conditioning where, you know, we have the body or the masses of our industry would pretty much all agree that we're underpaid, we're undervalued, and you know, we don't really get the respect that we deserve. Well, the bone that I have to pick with that is, well, if we do things that are outside of, you know, the big three or outside of a rack or outside of sprint mechanics, then what are we doing? You know, if we can't go outside of those boxes and we expect to get paid more and have higher value, people are always going to belittle it if we're just reduced to being the meathead or the get back coach or whatever. So I think, you know, for us at VHP, we have somewhat of a unique opportunity here where we can start to kind of play with some of these different, you know, methods, applications, or whatever it may be. And what I've come to at least find is that A, there's a lot of value in things outside of the rack. And this is, and I'm sure we'll get to it in a little bit, but this is what kind of started to lead me down the fascia rabbit hole. But, you know, to stay on track here, we've gotten a lot of success with just moving people in different planes of motion, doing it with different applied or applied stimuli. And we've done it with different, you know, angles, tempos, rates of force application, and just doing things in a sense that we're trying to get them to do what they do better. I'm not trying to make anybody better at a deadlift. I'm not trying to make anybody better at a bench press. I'm trying to give them the physical traits that are needed for them to have a longer career, to be better throughout that longevity, and to be able to have discretion over their own career and their own future, right? Injuries can be absolutely damning, and they can really compromise people, not only just in the physical sense, but also in the mental, emotional. You know, you have somebody who has a three-level cervical fusion plus lumbar compression. I mean, it takes these men and women, not exaggerating, hours in the morning to get going. And you just think about, you know, when you wake up in the morning, everybody is rushing to get breakfast, rushing to get the kids out the door, and then getting to work. I mean, it really precludes them, you know, from being able to just have normalcy in these day-to-day moments. So with what we're doing, if I'm going to, you know, take pride on anything, our staff has done an unbelievable job of just helping to restore function, to give one thing back, whatever that one thing may be for them, and then getting them to a point where they're virtually pain-free or significantly lower subjective pain levels. That ties right into the sleep, the cognition, the mental emotional piece, the general health and wellness. A lot of the athletes that we see are absolutely outright studs. They're completely, you know, 99th percentile, you know, for physical manifestation and ability. But then you get them into a closed space and you try to get them to downregulate and be a little bit more interoceptive or intrinsic with what they're doing. And it kind of, you know, creates like a haywire thing. So just getting them to be able to be more downregulated and then again have control over how their body is feeling or functioning is something that I'll forever be very, very proud of, you know, because what these men and women are doing and sacrificing, I mean, I thought that I understood it vicariously, but once you get into the thick of it, I didn't have a clue, man. It's intense and it's profound what they're you know, willing to sacrifice and subject themselves to for the benefit of us. But to, you know, segue that into the Rude Rock thing, you know, Rude Rock is a really very cool operation, and it's something that's obviously very sentimental to me. But, you know, interestingly, man, we kind of just started that on a flyer. It was, I had gotten to a point where I felt like I had a lot of, you know, material, content, concepts, things that I just wanted to publish. And, you know, I wanted to kind of put it through VHP. It didn't really work out. And so I was like, all right, well, I got all this stuff that I've compiled and let's just kind of run with it and see what happens. So we put it up, we launched it. And then, you know, within 2 years, we were, you know, being registered in almost 88 countries. And we've got people that are training with us from all over the world, from Gen Pop to, you know, we've got a couple of collegiate track and field athletes. We've got a couple of international basketball players and a lot of high level Olympic weightlifters because of my wife. So, you know, it was like, hey, this went from like being a hobbyist thing to now being something with value. And we're going to kind of push that and see where it goes. So it's been great, man. I have absolutely no complaints. And I'm just very fortunate to be in the positions that I'm in. I'm surrounded by so many great people at VHP. I mentioned them to you, but now that we're on air, you know, I've got to shout my staff out. Tim Kelly, Hannah Day, Allison Trago, Chipper Anderson, our newest guy. Man, we've just got a great staff here and we're doing some really cool stuff.
Well, if you look at anything and you get a peek inside a little bit on social media with what you do and then also on YouTube, I mean, you are doing some very special things. And like you said, outside the rack things. And that's where I found it to be so beneficial and interesting. You know, I've stolen a few things from you, to be honest with you, and it's helped me in my own training. And, you know, I primarily train for the powerlift. I train for the big three, but yeah. I spend 90% of my time on the accessory stuff. Yeah. Right. And I had to, I've got a couple little things going on and I looked at some of your stuff and I'm like, well, that makes sense. Right. Yeah. And so can you kind of dive into that a little bit as you're experimenting outside of the rack and doing the incredible things that you're doing there. And then the fascia stuff too, as well, because it's super interesting to me.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So I'll preface this by saying that I am not biting any of this from Bobby Stroup, because what I'm getting ready to say is going to sound very similar to what he was saying on a podcast earlier this week. But I have modeled my work and admired Bobby for years. But no, to that end, it's I think that the really the breaking point, or kind of the epiphany aha moment for me, was just really being put into focus that the body is a compilation of multiple systems, and each of these systems has very independent and specific functions that it performs. So the outcome of movement or the outcome of performance is the coalescence of all of these different systems and tissues and fibers and this that are all performing in concert. So when we look at the body from that way, and we take a step back and we analyze what a typical strength and conditioning, you know, practitioner is going to perform, they are almost inherently going to be driven by musculoskeletal function. How much can we clean? How fast? What's our velocity on our squat? You know, and again, this is not to denounce any of that stuff, because it's absolutely needed. High force is the ultimate like model for just about any athletic endeavor, right? However, especially once we're talking about kids that are post 21, 22, 23 years old, now we have already established very robust muscular capacity, you know, tendinous capacities. Now, where is that breaking point, right? Where is that next 1-2%? If we add another 20 pounds on our back squat, is that going to take Derrick Henry or whoever, you know, up another notch? I mean, maybe, but I doubt it. And in my population, with the, you know, with the operators and with the tactical population, it most certainly will not make them any better. Well, then where do we go? Okay, well, how about the proprioceptive system? How about the vestibular function? How about their fascial function? How about their ligamentous tolerance and their tensile resistance, you know, and being able to basically take the strength and elucidate it through different vectors, through different speeds, and through different orientation. And my biggest thing now has become this, you know, this obsession with fascia. And I know I come off as biased a lot of the times, but I promise you, the further that I've gone down this rabbit hole, the more and more I am invested in this approach. And again, it's just a matter of perspective, because if you're ever training the muscular system, you're training the fascial system. You 100% cannot separate the two.
Right.
What ends up changing is all of the training parameters. Right. So instead of just having a clear cut 5x5 at 85% or whatever it may be, right, we're looking more at the tempo, the speed, the rate of movement, the pulsing or the oscillatory function of movement, and basically just taking the same structural movements and doing them in slightly different ways with more angulation.
Oh, man. To me, it makes so much sense when you talk about like the angular side and then the tempo side of it too as well, because like do a tempo goblet squat, for instance, right? For the various different ones, or like a landmine goblet or something like that. It's going to show a lot of things, and it's going to help, like you said, the proprioceptors and being able to guide you and everything like that. So how did you kind of, was it just something you just started experimenting with or, and stuff like that, or what?
Yeah. So again, I just got to preface this again by saying that this is just a change in perspective more than anything else.
Yeah.
So the first thing that kind of broke the walls down for me was Anatomy Trains and Thomas Myers. Okay. He is, you know, for the most part, you know, collectively seen to be like one of the godfathers or founding fathers of the fascial stuff. I was very fortunate to be able to go to a course in January out in Colorado, a live dissection course, which was a week long, and my God, that was a powerful experience. But the Anatomy Trains book was the first thing that I was like, okay, there's something to this. So then the next one that I got was Fascial Training by Bill Parisi. And I'll be perfectly honest, I had a lot of questions about Bill Parisi prior to reading this book. And I had to double take a few times to make sure that I had the author right, because I just thought he was a foot speed quickness guy.
Yeah, me too.
And I'll tell you what, Matt, that book really changed everything for me. And if anybody out there is interested in understanding the fascial components on a reasonably rudiment level, start with that one. That was a fantastic book. It was a fun read. He's got a lot of different people that contributed to it, to include Stu McGill. And I believe Dan Pfaff as well. And that really made it make sense to me. So what it did for me, like I mentioned, I was a degenerate in undergrad. I did not do well. I didn't do well in anatomy particularly, but I think the reason that I was so, you know, I was having so much trouble at that time is because I'm like, this just doesn't, it's not complete. This is incomplete. You know, we're talking about all these things and A, it's boring. And I don't know how you can talk about something as sophisticated as the human body and have it be boring, but B, it just does not seem to add up to me. And so I think that the fascia stuff really helped me to kind of complete the functional anatomy and bring the two worlds together. So really, if I boil that down to a very basic 1, 2, 3 here, the main thing that I took away from this introductory fascia stuff is, number one, muscles and bones aren't the only thing. And I'm patently certain on that. So if muscles and bones aren't the only thing, then what are we missing in the training piece? The second thing is, we can only do so much if our proprioception and our nervous system and the kinetic integration is lacking. You can have all the force in the world. You can have all the strength in the world, but can you make it matter? And it's the easiest conversation ever. Take world-class powerlifters and then try to get them to go play flag football. You will have at least 5 ACLs and at least 5 Achilles. Now, they're very highly trained, but they're very highly trained for what they do. And I think that's the reason why strength and conditioning has adopted bench, squat, dead, clean, jerk, seamlessly, is because those are the things that we have found that are the most effective ways to apply force to the body. Now, the caveat to that is those are the best ways to get stronger for those lifts. How we get stronger for sport, that is a piece, but it's not the entirety.
You just nailed it on the head. I think that's an extremely important point that people need to understand, is like, it's more than just the big three or four, whatever it is, and lifting. Like, that to me is a big aha moment, I think, that you can have as a coach of like, okay, I don't necessarily have to back squat with my athletes to order to get them ready for their sport and everything like that. That's, you always hear that. And that, I hate when people say they're married to an exercise. I'd rather you be married to a system. Like, does it fit your system? Does it fit your core principles, right? What are your core principles? And if it does fit them, then yeah, let's go ahead and do it. Cause there's more than one way to skin a cat. I mean, you've talked about that exclusively here.
Yeah. And it's very similar to my mantra, you know, marry outcomes, not methods.
Yeah.
What is going to make us the best at the end of the day? And I've had plenty of experiences through VHP, particularly, where I've had several guys where, you know, and again, like, I'm working exclusively with adults, and not just adults, but guys that are highly trained, where, you know, they are dead set on, we're going to do this, this, and this, and I have to do this. Okay. If that's going to give us the best results in 4 weeks. Okay. I don't have to go about that. You know, let me give you some, you know, little 1, 2 cues here and there. We'll clean up some foot patterning and we'll call it even, man. But I think that that's really the biggest thing, man, is like, what is going to be best for them? What is going to provide the best outcome? And then what is going to create the best environment as we go along, you know? And again, like, it's just really kind of taking a step back. And I guess, you know, empathy is somewhat of a good word to apply here. But, you know, if I put myself in the position, I always use tutoring, because again, I struggled in school, right? And I went through numerous tutors over the years, because they may have all the answers and they may know all this material, you know, top to bottom. But if they can't make it make sense to me, and if they can't make it matter to me, then it's not effective, you know? So we've got to really remind ourselves of the human side of this too, and put yourself in your athlete's shoes. Don't try to force them into your methods, your principles. Try to picture yourself being a sophomore wide receiver who's, you know, running a 5.240 and needs to be faster to get on the field. We need to do whatever needs to happen to get them faster.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great point. I love that analogy too, as well. Why do you think it is so tough for people to kind of think outside of the rack to do these, you know, different things? Because I think for me, I mean, we talked about it before on the podcast, like, if we want to grow the industry, we want to grow as coaches, right? Don't we want to do things a little bit differently and show our value as a strength coach?
I think that it the first thing to start is to be very selfish. Yeah. And to be very selfish to understand. Right. Like, I don't lose sleep at night, but I am driven by figuring out, like, my singular muse for life is trying to figure out why there are so many non-contact soft tissue injuries. And I ain't alone on that endeavor by any means. For me, I mean, because again, like, I'm like, well, if we're doing the best training, if we have more ability to measure, we have more resources than ever before, we're able to post open forums and have live time conversations with the best coaches in the world, then why the hell is this still happening at an exponential rate? I mean, injury rates in the NFL in 2020 are higher than they were in 2010.
Yep.
How does that happen?
Yep.
So for me, again, it's like, I need to be very selfish and try to figure out how I can continue to grow and grow and grow so that I can embark on selfless endeavors. Mm-hmm. But I'm still young, man. I'm still very new to this. So I need to really saturate myself in all the material that I can. I need to really push myself as hard as I can within reason, but I need to help figure this out for this industry and for these athletes. And I think that, you know, the least that we can do is all we can do. Yeah. Right. And for me, you know, if I'm working for somebody from 9 to 5, from 5 to 9, you better believe I'm working for me.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, it's with Rude Rock and everything like that. I mean, there's some big stuff coming down the pipe. That's for sure. But I think for me, you nailed on the head again. I repeat that earlier, but I saw that with the 2010 to 2020 on the injury rates. And it had me questioning so many things where it's like, what are we missing here? Like there's obviously, and then you look at this discrepancies, like versus teams versus other teams, like what were they doing so differently? And then you see how they practice differently with their load management and everything like that. Or maybe some guys took days off of practicing and stuff like that. The human body is so complex. Like I truly believe it's so complex that we don't really understand all the mechanisms, how it comes together. I love how you talked about how everything works together though. As a strength coach, you need to understand all those little things. Like how does the sleep work in? How's the hydration, the fascia, the connective, and everything like that. So
we're still just scratching the surface.
Yeah. And that's the thing. That's why I love listening and reading, you know, stuff that you put out or the people that you help promote. Like the, you know, you talk about Bill Parisi and the fascia. It's like, we need to be able to have these conversations and see what's happening. What are you seeing and stuff like that?
So that was my follow-up to being selfish. The second thing is ask questions. Genuinely, yeah. Questions. This is another thing. I feel like I'm living on a soapbox right now, but that's another thing right now is like, you know, we've created this ominous culture with training conditioning where we have to kind of pick sides. You got to be latched onto somebody's brand or whatever. And I'll tell you what, man, I will never turn somebody down. If they reach out to me and they say, hey man, I've got a question on this, this, and this, I will absolutely carve out time and I'll get on the phone with you. We'll get on a FaceTime, because every single time I have reached out to these, you know, these upper tier coaches, these guys who've been in the game for 20, 30 years, every single time I've reached out to them, they pick the phone up and they answer.
Yep.
And they've been more than willing to share and help. So for me, being somebody who's very introverted and kind of just keep to myself by nature, I've made it a point over the last year or two to really try to reach out and ask these men and women questions.
Yeah.
You know, and it's been, I'm very fortunate for that. And again, because of how, you know, open and honest and transparent some of these coaches have been with me, I feel like it's only right to do it, you know, to anybody who I can possibly help.
Yeah, and that's the thing that is very beneficial within the industry is when you can get that pocket of people. And I think the industry is getting a lot better with that. You know, there's more podcasts out there. There's more reading. There's more avenues for coaches to get their names out there too as well. But yeah, just being able to pick up the phone and talk to somebody is massive. Or just go visit them. Like you said, you took a whole week going out to Colorado to do something.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, just because it's somewhat recent, I mean, George Carvajal is somebody who made just such an incredible, profound impact on me, because I obviously knew his name. We had loosely been affiliated for a couple of years, but I was having a lot of trouble with leadership and kind of management oversight with the staff. And I was doing a really poor job.
Yeah.
I was dumbfounded. You know, I didn't really know what to do. So I just shot him a DM randomly. We've never exchanged text or anything. And he was like, yeah, you want to set up a meeting tomorrow for 11? I'm like, yeah, sure. And he sat there for an hour and a half, and I had pages and pages of notes, and I took it and I applied it. It fixed all the problems. And now I'll forever be indebted to George. But it's little things like that, though, you know, that, you know, people feel like they're being burdensome or they're, you know, annoying people. F that. Ask questions, get friendly with people. They have answers that you don't. Extract them and then do what you can for somebody else or for them.
Yeah. Do it for somebody else, man. That's a big one. Like, who can you help with this valuable information? You took it for the leadership side, and it's now exponentially helped your staff and everything like that. What has that been like now, becoming the head strength?
It's been interesting. I'm very aggressive, I guess. I have a mindset of just what's next. And it was almost like the same, and you understand this too, I'm sure, but it was almost like the same transition of when you first get married, right? You go from being an outdoor cat to now you're domesticated. I've got pumpkin pancakes and bacon waiting for me every morning when I go down, you know, at 5:30 in the morning. My wife's already cooked me breakfast. I'm like, how the hell can I have a bad day? Pumpkin pancakes. And, you know, but coming from a position where, you know, early on, I got myself into a lot of shit and I got myself into a lot of bad places, and I was very comfortable being uncomfortable. So then it was like this paradox where you fast forward 5, 6, 7 years, and it was very uncomfortable for me to be comfortable. Yep. And I didn't really understand how to settle into that. So I think with the staff, it was very similar, where I'm like, what do you mean you're tired? What do you mean you're not, you know, motivated about this, or you're not interested in this? Like, we have things to do. And this was a large part of the conversation that George and I had, but I'll share this with you. One thing that he said is, nobody can ever feel anonymous in the workplace. They need to have an identity, and they need to have some kind of a visceral or tangible contribution to what you guys are doing. And that really made me think, because I'll be perfectly honest in saying that I had kind of chalked some people up to being just people who were here rather than people who can contribute. Right. And once he said that to me, it totally shifted my perspective. And now I've gotten more out of that coach than I have out of anybody else in the last 5 months, you know? And so a lot of it was like just kind of me, you know, not only just diffusing and just kind of chilling out, for lack of better terms, but then also being very analytical and seeing how I can utilize the coaches that we have in their best abilities.
Yeah. Utilizing everything, like, cause you want to maximize the potential that you possibly can, especially with the staff and everything like that. You want to maximize how they communicate. What are their strengths too? You want to maximize their strengths and then build upon the weaknesses, right? Don't demean those weaknesses. We want to build upon the weaknesses. I think that happens a lot of the time too.
Yeah. And my goal was definitely never to be demeaning or belittling, but I think I just kind of have that tendency about me indirectly or unintentionally. Yeah. And, you know, again, like, the thing that I've kind of funneled back to is keep the goal the goal. And this is where ego and, you know, power trips and things really start to kind of fumigate people. They get a couple of advances or promotions, and now all of a sudden it starts to cloud their thought, right? But my goal isn't to make a point to a coach or to try to like get my point across to my assistant coach. My goal is to make that coach as best as they can possibly be with whatever I can part on them or upon them. And then more importantly, the athlete is in the best position and the best care that they can be in. So forget the ego, forget the feelings, and forget the personal relationship or lack thereof. What needs to happen? Keep the goal the goal.
Yep. I think that's great advice that people need to have. If you're a director, you're somebody that's in leadership role, that's something that you really, because like you said, it does get clouded once you kind of start getting some more, it really, really does. And you start to not understand. I can't agree with you more on that. I mean, I can't really dive in too much deeper because I think you kind of nailed it on the head a little bit, but let's talk communication as a coach. How important is communication that you found within your athletes and the people that you've trained with? We all know it's super important, but I want to hear what your point of it.
Yeah. So I'm very verbose. I have a very wide bank of words and things and whatever. Right. But the words are tertiary to everything else. Yeah. They don't mean nearly as much as the genuine body language and demeanor. And then the timing of when you are giving your input. Those are two very critical things. So again, like if we use a coach relationship here, you know, a coach who's having personal issues, they've, you know, just broke up with somebody, whatever, right? Like that's not my time to come in and talk about foot intrinsic muscles and what's going on at, you know, the firing sequence of the calf. That's my time to just find 10 minutes in the day, bring them back to the office and just say, hey, you need to get anything off your chest. You doing okay today? Right? So a part of it is not talking as much as you're talking, right? It's knowing when to shut the hell up and just listen. Just be a genuine listener. From there, I think that the best thing that I can say with the communication piece is versatility. And that applies equally to, you know, intra-staff communication, communicating to superiors, and then communicating with athletes, right? It's when I have my guys who are my, you know, kind of BSers and just, you know, like to joke and are more talkative, 2-3 years ago, I would have met that with resistance. Hey man, we're on the clock. We got to go. Now, if you want to BS, oh, okay. Let's talk shop a little bit. Yeah. Right. Then when I have people who are actually honestly more like me in nature, where they're more type A, they're just here to train, they want to sweat and they want to work, then I shut the hell up. Get out of the way, right? Don't force feed them conversation. Now, if we talk about queuing, the queuing piece is something that we have started to kind of actually change how we're doing this. And what we're doing now is we're designating the first or the afternoon session of the first day, instead of it being like a general like foundations intro, we're now doing this as movement literacy education. So we're taking our guys and girls to the back room. It's one-on-one. We're right by the whiteboard. I'm filming a lot of this, and we're starting with, you know, foot pressure and position. Where are your knees in a hinge? Where are they in a squat? How do we attack a lunge? How do we attack a step up?
Kickstand
versus split. And so I'm giving them both auditory, visual, and kinesthetic. And then I'll, you know, kind of use the dimmer switches. If they're more kinesthetic, do more touch feel. If they're more visual, do more whiteboard and video review. But giving them all of our big hitter cues and all of our fundamental positions that we're going to work in a million different ways over the next month.
Yep.
And just really isolating it down. And I'll give them those big hitter, you know, kind of touch point cues, soft knees, melt the foot, stab the toe, you know, close the ribs, like all those things that we're going to repeat over and over. We just brush it up right on that first day.
You're educating them too, as well.
And huge part of it. Yeah.
Because you're educating them for like 4 weeks down the road, or like when you're going to give that all away.
Yeah. Because, and again, for our setup and for what we're trying to do, the number one goal is autonomy. They're only with us for a month. We're not really going to create much physiological adaptation. We're not going to really create much, you know, mechanical adaptation. We'll get some, but what's really going to be the lasting change is you taking as much of this as you can, and then being able to autonomize it down the road. And then that's when we set them up with, you know, departure programs that are hyperlinked with instructions and everything. So like, it's kind of just setting that first bedrock on day one, you know, making that the impressionable moment, and then carrying it from there.
Yeah, I love that, because like you said, you only get a month with them, right? Yeah. You get the two sessions every day. That's not, I mean, it's a good amount of time, but you've got to be able to push them forward towards, you know, their next endeavors and everything like that.
Yeah. And usually when people are coming to us, it's to problem solve, right? Like they're coming because they have an Achilles, they're coming off an Achilles tear, they have a slab tear, whatever. So like my little euphemism for it is machete or scalpel, right? Be a machete when you can. When you can be general, just be general. But when you have to, you got to pull the scalpel out, right? So I'll get the scalpel out with the shoulder, the foot, the ankle, whatever it is, right? And we'll do concentrated work there. But the rest of the time, it's really just teaching them how to train.
Yeah. That's huge. I'm glad that you said that, as far as like teaching somebody how to train, because how many times have people come in and they think they know how to train, but they have no clue whatsoever. That's a huge thing.
None. And don't confuse high level athletes for knowing how to train either.
Right. 100%.
They know how to do exactly what they know how to do, and they just happen to do it in an elite level, which in most cases is because of genetics and nothing else anyhow. So don't confuse people who are in shape, high level, you know, good on the field or whatever, as being good in the weight room. Definitely no carryover there.
No, there's nothing. I can always remember there was an athlete I worked with. He was, you know, being a high draft pick and everything like that, and great on the field in the weight room. It was very poor. That was my first time kind of having, I was very young in my career, and I'm like, oh, like not everybody is a freak in the weight room.
Yep. Yeah. It'll surprise you, man. And again, like that's another one that's just been a very long learning curve for me. And I see things, without exaggerating, I see things at least once or twice a week that I've never seen before.
It's great. It's always great to be seeing that, learn as a coach. And you're just like, okay, that's a new thing. We'll go ahead and get you out of here, Danny. I can't thank you enough for being here on the podcast. We'll have to do this again, that's for sure. Last question before we get you out of here. What are you grateful for?
Yeah. So when I saw your script, man, and I appreciated that, because I like having a little bit of heads up on these podcasts. But when I saw your script, I really thought that was a good question. And I sat and pondered on that for a little bit. Because again, man, I'm just like, I'm just very forward driven. You know, I'm thankful for endless amounts of things, but I'm always curious about what's next. So I turned that into a little self-reflection moment. And I think more so now than ever, I think I'm just really grateful to just be me. And I know that probably comes off as very arrogant for some and entitled, but I guess what I mean by that is like, there's a lot of things going on and there's a lot of people that are really struggling and suffering. And, you know, for some of them, it's at their own volition and decision-making, but for a lot of others, it's not, man. And like, I'm just very fortunate to be in the position that I'm in, to be surrounded by the people that I'm surrounded by, to have the opportunities professionally that I'm having, and being able to just pursue the things that I want to pursue. I think, you know, again, like I tie that right into, you know, it's a very powerful reminder for me to pay it forward and, you know, just do whatever we can do, however much we can do, you know, for things that matter to us. And so like for, you know, Rude Rock, you know, one of the stipulations of our business plan was that 20% of our annual revenue will be donated to something. Mm-hmm. And so for 2020, we did a couple of great foundations for social inequality and justice. You know, we looked into a couple of organizations that were helping with neglected and battered Black females. We were looking into some things for some veteran organizations. We contributed some money to some veteran organizations. And then now we've started to get more into, you know, raising funding for canine cancer and dogs, you know, that are getting operations and things like that, you know, just kind of trying to help with that. So beyond the money, you know, having more conversations and kind of seeing where we can, you know, help people with the skills that we have. Cause I think at the end of the day, that's all it really boils down to is, you know, I wish that I were intelligent enough to be able to cure cancer. I'm not, I'm never going to get there, but I'm getting pretty good at this strength and conditioning stuff. So people who are, you know, completing, you know, chemo and completing treatments for cancer, hey, let me help you now, right? Back on course. And we've had quite a few of those, which has been really cool. But yeah, man, I'm just very grateful to be in the positions that I'm in and being surrounded by these people. Cause I'll tell you what, man, there's never a day that I have at VHP or otherwise where I'm not around people that are doing 10 times more than I am. And that motivates the hell out of me.
Well, I tell you what, man, you're doing amazing things with Rude Rock and VHP. I can say thank you for all the information that you put out. I told you before we started the podcast, I'm dumber than a box of rocks, and it makes me a little bit smarter whenever I listen and read to you, Danny. So I appreciate you very much, man.
Matt, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it, man. And go Raiders.
Yeah, man. Raider Nation. Hey, real quick before I get you out of here, social media, if people want to reach out to you or they want to look at Rude Rock on YouTube, anything like that?
Yeah. So we're definitely, I hate Instagram. I'm hanging in there, but I really hate Instagram. I'm still comfortable in the Twitter streets. So for Twitter and Instagram, my personal handle is @DanMode_VHP. But I would drive everybody to the Rude Rock YouTube channel is really where we're putting our eggs right now. We've got a lot of material up there and it's still free. So Rude Rock Strength is our YouTube channel. And then @RudeRockStrength is our Instagram handle. And then, like I mentioned, on the VHP side, Tim Kelly, Allison Trago, Hannah Day, Chipper Anderson are all doing great things. And then on the Rude Rock side, my wife, Nicole, and Jeremy Aspa is our business partner, doing great things there too. So keep a lookout for them as well.
Danny, go follow him, people. That freaking YouTube and it's all great stuff, man. I appreciate it very much. Danny, thank you again, man.
I appreciate you, brother. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Hey, everybody, make sure you go follow him on social media, see what he's doing, and go Raiders and stay strong.